You're listening to a podcast of Your Pet Matters with me, Dr. Michael Tequila, Saturday mornings at 10 a.m. on 1077thebronc.com.
Sit down, grab a blanket, and snuggle up with your furry family, because it's time for Your Pet Matters with Dr. T of Progressive Veterinary Care, where Dr. Michael Tequila will discuss everything you need to know to keep your fuzzy friends happy, healthy, and safe. Your Pet Matters is underwritten by Progressive Veterinary Care, 390 County Road, Route 518, Skillman. For more information online, it's ProgressiveVeterinaryCare.com. Here he is now, only on 107.7 The Bronc.
Good morning and welcome to Your Pet Matters. I am Michael, Dr. T. Tequila, and I am here to help you this morning, as I am every Saturday morning. Just learn about your pet, learn about some medical things, maybe give a little advice to some up-and-coming veterinarians or veterinarian owners, just a plethora of things today. And it's interesting because during COVID, we are seeing some interesting things. But before I start on that, I think that it's just time to acknowledge that upcoming, or it may have already happened since the timing of this recording, it's Veterinary Technician Week. Always takes place in October. And if you're like me during COVID, I don't even know what day of the week it is. But I think it's a Saturday because that's when the show runs. But we'll just keep it at that. But it's Technician Week. And shout out to all the veterinary technician, all the veterinary team members. You know, the doctor may be the, I don't even want to say the hub, the source of medical treatment, but without the team, let's put it this way. So if the doctor is the body of the hospital, the team is your heart and soul. And together they make a complete entity, a unit that will work with you and your pets to get much better pet health care. So a shout out to the veterinary team members. It's Veterinary Technician Week, and we couldn't do what we do, we being doctors like myself, without the team. So thank you, thank you, thank you. A simple thank you is all the team is looking for, because they work really hard, even much more hard in these difficult times. So let's get to the show. So I thought I'd do a little bit of a mishmash this show based on things I've observed, things I found this week in my practice. So a lot of dental issues coming up. And so, you know, I think the best analogy is your veterinarian is going to look at your pet's teeth. And if they see tartar buildup, they're going to discuss with you that there is tartar buildup and the benefits of doing what we call professional dental cleaning. So I always get this look of puzzlement from clients when I talk to them about dental disease. And what you need to know as pet parents is that anywhere from 75 to 85% of pets by the age of around 3 human years. So keep in mind, that's much more significant in that pet's life. That is probably close to, I don't know, 20 some odd years in a pet's life. So picture yourself not really going to the dentist, let alone getting your teeth brushed for that time frame. So you can imagine what tartar that buildup is. And so you have to keep in mind that a huge majority of dental issues are present by the age of 3 human years in your pet. And so typically at that time, sometimes much earlier, depending on whether your pet is small. So small dogs and cats get a much more rapid dental tartar buildup. So typically at that age, we see about a grade 1 dental tartar. So we grade them grade 1 through 4. So grade 1 is you see a little bit of thickening, inflammation of the gums. There's early sign of dental tartar buildup. And that is the opportune time to get the teeth cleaned. And the reason why I say that is if we wait longer, like any disease process, things get worse. And as things get worse in the mouth, things get infected. And when they get infected, the ability for that teeth to be whole and healthy goes down. And inevitably, as you wait, the risk of having that teeth needing to be extracted goes up. So grade 2 is very common. It's the gums can appear really swollen or red. You definitely notice bad breath at that time. And I would definitely recommend a dental cleaning. And grade two dentals are the unknown to us. It's one of those things where you can say, yeah, there's grade two tartar, but then you can potentially end up with extractions. Grade three, you're starting to get bleeding gums. You're actually seeing gum destruction, and maybe the gum is starting to tear away from the teeth, and you actually start to see the root. And then grade four is you've got a lot of dental disease going on. The breath is really bad. You see that huge gray, beige, brown, green stuff all over the teeth, the tartar buildup. And then it's very concerning for us because the tartar, which is bacteria, has now entered the bloodstream of your pet. And it is not uncommon to have that infection affect the kidneys, liver, and heart. You may have loose teeth falling out. So if you're at that stage, if you're at a grade four, definitely talk to your veterinarian and definitely get a dental cleaning. So going back to my point about grade one dental tartar, it's something that's the age and the time that you want to get that teeth clean. And you can definitely start young. So as puppies, as kittens, it's a great time to introduce your pet to teeth brushing. And that can range from just rubbing your finger on the outsides of the teeth, putting a little pet toothpaste on there. Pet toothpaste is not filled with the chemicals that our toothpaste are, so they don't have those foaming agents. Those foaming agents can upset the stomach, so they weren't designed to be swallowed. As pet toothpaste is flavored, it's enzyme-based, it's okay if they eat it, but you don't want them licking it. You want it put on their tooth, and as it's on that teeth, the enzymes break down the tartar. So typical puppy kitten kits encompass or include a toothpaste sample and or toothbrush, so you can definitely go there, and there's lots of tips and pointers on how to do that, so talk to your veterinarian about that. So the biggest setback I get is two things. It's twofold. One is, well, geez, that's the price of a dental is a little high, and I'm scared of anesthesia, because you cannot do a professional dental cleaning without anesthesia. And no matter what anyone tells you, that is the best medicine for your pet, is to use anesthesia. Because when I go to the dentist, I can actually open and close my mouth, I can spit, I can prevent fluid from being swallowed down, and I'm not going to inhale any of the excess wash that occurs with the use of the instruments, the cleaners, etc. The pets can't. So, and in order to clean properly on the gum line, very few pets will stay still, and I have yet to see a pet can stay still for a radiograph or x-ray of the tooth. So what's involved in a professional dental cleaning is the following. There'll be general anesthesia. So you have to make sure that your pet is in good health, that they don't have any underlying conditions, or if they do, they are controlled and your veterinarian has cleared your pet for anesthesia. So an exam and blood work are common things before any surgical procedure, any anesthesia. So get those cleared first. And then when they're put under anesthesia, then what we do is no different from what you experience at your dentist. We do digital dental radiographs. We clean the teeth with sonicating devices, and we buff and polish the teeth. There is fluoride treatments. The big difference is that if there's an infected tooth, then we talk about extraction. There are high-end procedures that veterinary dental specialists, we've had Dr. John Lewis on the show. We've had his partner on the show as well. They own veterinary dental specialty. They are phenomenal vet dentists. They can do things like root canals, caps, etc. So very, very skilled and difficult procedures can be done by veterinary dental procedures. And they also do surgery on the jaw and the mouth itself, from tumors to bone cancer, etc. They can perform those things. Your veterinarian may be able to do those things, but most veterinarians do the dental procedures. So, you know, I get pushback on price. So in order to do a surgical procedure, there is an inherent cost. So you have to understand that. So that's where there's a difference in cost between, just doing what's called a dental cleaning and, a professional dental cleaning. So the second thing I get back is I'm scared of anesthesia. Well, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said there was no risk to anesthesia. There always is a minimal risk. But by performing a really good physical exam, making sure the heart is good, and making sure that your blood panel shows that everything is good, And if there is even a disease process, everything is stable. It is not uncommon to do dentals in kidney patients, in hypothyroids and hyperthyroids, as long as the disease is stable. And even in cardiac patients, as long as your veterinarian is using the right anesthetic drugs, has consulted with a cardiologist to get the best drugs on board, the anesthetic procedures are possible and do happen. So, you know, but it there always is a risk. But if you don't do that dental cleaning, and we go from grade one to grade two to grade three to grade four, that long-term medical risk to your pet is huge. And the other question I get is, well, what happens if all their teeth need to be removed? Well, many times not all their teeth need to be removed. Even in cases where all their teeth are removed, pets do incredibly well. It's those older pets that actually are missing teeth that are in better medical shape than those that have all the infected teeth on board. So it is something that I would definitively highly recommend. Let your veterinarian look at your pet's teeth, preferably twice a year, because dental tartar can build up in a six-month human time frame, and then discuss with you not only home dental care, because after the professional dental cleaning, you want to do a proper home dental care so you never have to do a dental cleaning again, and the necessity for that dental care and why it's beneficial. Okay, let's take a short break and we'll come back and talk more right here on Your Pet Matters. Stay tuned, 107.7 on the FM, 107.7, thebronc.com. And we're streaming and podcasting everywhere, which is awesome.
We're back with Your Pet Matters with Dr. T of Progressive Veterinary Care, discussing everything you need to know to keep your furry friends happy, healthy, and safe. Only on 107.7, The Bronc.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, it's Dr. T here on Your Pet Matters. And I am here, sorry, just adjusting the mic here because I'm getting a little crunchy noises. And I'm here to discuss some medical stuff there. But I wanted to tell I started the program by talking about dental disease, but experiences this week were very interesting. And I think there's things many times your veterinarian may not communicate with you, but I'm going to be open and honest here. So I got stumped twice this week. Well, kind of stumped, but stumped enough to, you know, just be a little concerned about what's going on. And one stump was that I felt good about it, and I'll tell you about that later. The other stump was just approach and everything like that. But it is not uncommon that your veterinarian doesn't have all the answers. And it's not uncommon that they, just by nature, we are kind of inquisitive scientists, and we will research and find out novel ways and things to do things. So, but not every veterinarian will tell you this out front. So let me start with the story. So I had a routine. So my first stump was routine. And in the 20 years I've been doing veterinary medicine, this has never happened to me. So it is not uncommon if your pet presents with an allergic reaction can occur from anything. Very common are insect bites, insect stings. And so the standard procedure when you're dealing with allergic reactions to use antihistamines, specifically Benadryl. So an allergic reaction in a pet can be mild, or can then become more major, where you get facial swelling or swelling at the sites, and that sort of allergic reaction can lead to a difficulty in breathing and then can become life-threatening. So when it is not uncommon that the call we get coming in is, my dog got stung by a bee and there's swelling going on. So to err on the side of caution, we always have clients come in. We can do a physical exam, see if there's any sort of respiratory distress, see if there's swelling. And many times we do an injection of Benadryl and then send home with Benadryl. Or if the owner has Benadryl at home, we discuss, you know, the dosing protocol for Benadryl. And a friend of mine, Dr. Jason Nicholas, PreventiveVet.com, right on his website, he's got a dosage calculation for Benadryl should your pet suffer an allergic reaction. It's interesting because many times when clients do act upon that and give the right dosing of Benadryl, it does give you time to get to emergent care. But this was interesting. So young puppy, the description was pretty sure my dog got stung because they yelped on the ground, ran away, and I noticed hundreds of stinging insects there. The owner was not able to identify the stinging insects. After discussion, it may have been hornets. So we have the assumption, educated assumption, that we've been stung by a bee. So when the dog presented, we had swelling on the eye and slight swelling on the right shoulder. So as I've done numerous times over 20 years, administered Benadryl. And we give it IV, intravenously, so that it takes effect very quickly. Within 10 seconds, the dog started exhibiting what we call biting behavior, which is almost mini seizure-like behavior. And my first reaction was, So you're dealing with a potential emergency situation. We got an intravenous catheter on board. We started fluids. And I went out and talked to the owner and tell him what's going on. Not certain what's happening. Could be a reaction to the Benadryl, but typically that sort of reaction occurs at high doses of Benadryl. So we call poison control, and literally they put us on hold because they got stumped at Denver. And so while I was on hold, I called a friend of mine who's been doing emergency medicine for longer than I've been practicing, and ran the case by them, and their words were, "Yeah, I've never seen that before." So. Long story short, poison control suggested doing, no seizure meds, suggesting something else. Owner declined. Thankfully, over the next few hours on IV supportive care, the dog responded well. The funny thing about this, though, was that the swelling went down immediately. So that was stump number one. Dog's doing great. Stump number two, involves mouse poison or rat poison. So got a call yesterday, 8-month-old Burmese dog named Bigus. My dog just ate rat poison. So typically, if your pet has eaten a poison, the best thing you can do as a pet parent is definitely call your veterinarian. There's two options. Your veterinarian can then call poison control, because poison control is manned by people that are trained, and they can give the veterinarian the exact advice on what to do about treatment protocols. Or you as a pet parent can call Pet Poison Hotline or SPCA Pet Poison Control. There is a fee, and there is some discounts if you have a microchip or whatever. You can talk to your veterinarian about that, but they will guide you on what to do. And it's always great to have the packaging, because something may be something may be something else. So that's what draws the stump thing. The stump thing is the amount ingested was unknown and the packaging was unknown. And the owner called poison control and they had to figure out what to do. So timing is also important. If your pet ever ingests something toxic, something foreign that you know won't cause any issue, then one thing your veterinarian can do quite easily is make your pet vomit. So poison, we got the case number. It's important to get a case number. So we called back into poison control, got the case number, and figured out what we could best do. So Biggest came in crazy as ever. And so the first thing we did was actually we induced vomiting. And your veterinarian can use a drug called apomorphine. It works wonderfully. So what came up was breakfast, clearly had some eggs, and some of the mouse poison. It was fairly difficult to identify it, but we kind of got an identification. And what your vet will do is a lot of these things can cause anything from bleeding to swelling of the brain. But if you can get it out, that is huge. Once it's out, you can actually protect the body by using activated charcoal. You give that to the pet to eat, and it helps absorb toxins all the way through. And your vet will typically do blood work and urine analysis and everything. So long story short, the good news was Biggest's blood work was normal. Ironically, I picked up a urinary tract infection as a result of this.
you know, hopefully he's still, this just happened, so hopefully he's still doing well. But I mean, there was no indication that there was any sort of medical disorder at this point. I'm very confident we got most, if not all, of the toxin out. We gave him activated charcoal to cover any potential issues there. Many times you can use vitamin K. It helps reverse the effects of the, what we call rodenticide or toxin. And I sent him home with antibiotics to treat for the bladder infection. But through this all, it's very stressful for the clients. It was somewhat stressful for us because we didn't know what sort of toxin we're dealing with. And the good news is in a case like this, Bigus just came out great so far and doing well. But in many cases, some pets just don't. I had a case early in my career where a lab came in. They were pale. They had fluid in their lungs. When we tapped the fluid, it was pure blood. And the stumping part of that was that Mr. brought the dog in. We're trying to figure out what's going on. Fairly young, healthy lab before this. And I got the best advice as a young practicing vet that I ever did. My boss at the time said, okay, let's look at this. We're getting mixed answers about what's happening, but what is the pet showing us now? So we queried about the potential ingestion of mice or rat poison because that causes the bleeding. No. So we clearly had to start therapy. And 45 minutes later, mom calls and said, absolutely, the dog got into mouse poison because he had it in his shed and all over the shed, and the dog goes in there and absolutely. So I don't know if dad got reprimanded when he went home. I don't know if dad yesterday was going to, Biggest's dad was going to get reprimanded by mom about mouse poison. Who knows? But the good news is both dogs did well with therapy. But I was really worried about the lab earlier in my career. And being early in my career, the confidence level isn't anywhere near as great, but it was a good outcome. But yeah, he was bleeding into his lungs. He was bleeding. So there was a lot of issue going on there, as Bigus was doing pretty good. So, you know, definitely toxins are things, you know, it used to be antifreeze. Now they have PetSafe antifreeze. But there's a lot of things that are completely toxic to pets that we just take for granted. Even some of our medications that are fine for us can be toxic to pets. So just be careful about things like that. But, you know, there is Pet Poison Control Hotline, SPCA Pet Poison Control Hotlines, your veterinarian as a resource. And, you know, they all work together to help your pet along. So that's the stump stories. Okay, let's take a short break and we'll be back with more right here on Your Pet Matters. 107.7, thebronc.com.
Every weekend, you'll find a project to get involved with. And sometimes, it'll include your scaly or furry partner in crime. From Your Pet Matters with Dr. T, it's time for Producer's Pet Project. Your go-to for pet news, recall alerts, adoption services, and overall helpful tips and tricks to keep your best friend happy and healthy. Producer's Pet Project is underwritten in part by Progressive Veterinary Care.
Good morning, everyone, and happy Saturday. I hope you're enjoying this week's episode of Your Pet Matters with Dr. Michael Tequila. Danny Romanowski, your producer here, with another edition of the Producer's Pet Project. On today's edition of the Producer's Pet Project, I will be discussing some do's and don'ts for picking out Halloween costumes for your pets this holiday season. I was always told to get the bad news out of the way first, so let's start with the don'ts of pet costumes. Don't pick a costume with lots of loose parts, embellishments, or buttons. The phrase, the more the merrier, does not apply to your pet's costume. It's best to limit your pet's costume to the essentials. Costume items like belts and capes can easily get caught or stuck on things. Other embellishments like buttons or loose fabric can potentially be swallowed, chewed, or ingested by your pet. Don't take your pet trick-or-treating. Trick-or-treating might seem like a fun activity for the whole family, but it can be a terrifying experience for your pet. Not only is Halloween filled with scary sounds, smells, and decorations, but the costumes can also be terrifying and confusing for your pets to witness. If you're planning to take your pet out for an evening event, it is important to make sure they have reflective details on their costumes. Don't take off your pet's collar or ID tag. You might be tempted to take off your pet's collar and or ID tag to make their costume fit. Please don't. Halloween can be a downright frightful experience for your pet. If your pet bolts from your house or gets away from you due to fear or excitement, you'll have a much harder time reclaiming them if they don't have their ID on. Make sure your pet's ID tag information is up to date before any Halloween activities and that their tag is easy to find. Don't leave your pet unattended while in costume. If your pet is comfortable in clothes and costumes, that's great. However, there is a laundry list of things that could go wrong at any one moment. That being said, your pet should be under close supervision at any time they are wearing a costume. Please be sure to keep a close eye on your pet while they're costumed so you can monitor for safety and comfort. Now on to the do's of pet costumes. Do choose a costume based on what your pet likes. Not all pets like costumes, and that's okay. If your pet doesn't like costumes, then it's best to skip it altogether. An alternative would be to add one or two simple accessories to your pet's look, like a bandana or a TY Beanie Babies tag. You're increasing the likelihood that your pet will stay safe and comfortable. Do pick a costume that fits your pet properly and doesn't obstruct their senses. A costume that's too loose can cause your pet to become tangled or even trip. If your pet's costume's too tight, it could restrict movement, cause sore spots, obstruct breathing, or cut off circulation. It is important to also consider the weight of your pet's costume. Picking a heavy or bulky costume could hurt your pet or make them uncomfortable. A wide variety of costumes for pets include hats and masks. Do not obstruct your pet's ears or eyes. Your pet is more likely to be scared or confused if they cannot see or hear properly. Do take your pet's costume for a test run. It's important to make sure that your pet's costume fits them properly and is comfortable. The best way to ensure this is to test it out. Let your pet become comfortable with their costume by trying it on for a couple of days before the costumed event. This will give you enough time to see if you need to make any modifications to the costume to ensure your pet's comfort and safety. Do keep your pet leashed while in costume. It might seem hard to get the perfect costume pick of your pet with their leash dangling in the frame. Don't cave to the temptation. Keep your pet leashed while they're costumed. Halloween is full of strange, scary, and downright weird costumes, smells, sights, and an unleashed dog might get scared by a spooky surprise and run. By keeping your dog on their leash, you're helping them stay safe from unknown Halloween haunts. To recap, I'm going to list some reminders for you this Halloween season. What to look for in a dog costume. Overall comfort. Tails, ears, and eyes should not be covered, tangled, or pinned. Costumes should be loose enough to move freely, but not so large to be tripped over. Never ride a dog as part of a costume, or ever, as it can lead to early arthritis and overall pain for the animal. To help overcome or prevent fear of a costume, introduce your dog to the costume ahead of time. Dogs should wear costumes under adult supervision only. Drape the costume loosely around the dog's body to start. Practice putting it on and taking it off around the house prior to Halloween. Treat the dog while they are in the costume. Smooth out the dog's skin and fur under the costume so that the dog does not feel pinched in any way. Don't forget to also keep dogs safe and calm during Halloween by being proactive. Humans' costumes can be very scary. Offer treats during the environments where there are humans wearing costumes so that the dog can stay relaxed. Keep your own face uncovered around your dog. Remember that Halloween candy is very unsafe for dogs. Never feed your dog Halloween candy. If a dog finds and consumes candy on its own, they may need medical attention quickly. Remember that trick-or-treaters are ringing doorbells and that might get dogs worked up. So set up an environment with gates and enrich or put the dog in another room. Dogs should wear their identification collars at all times during Halloween and otherwise, in case they get spooked or dart away. Now for my cat parents. It can be a good idea to keep your outdoor cats inside for several days before and after Halloween just to keep them safe. And also make sure to especially keep your black cats out of the way of cruel jokes and pranks around this time of year. Here are my last couple of tips during this Halloween season. 1. Keep your pets away from lit pumpkins. They could harm themselves or knock them over and accidentally start a fire. 2. Keep them in mind when you're creating your Halloween plans. If you're going to be gone, leave all the lights out in your home so that trick-or-treaters know not to knock on your door or ring your doorbell. 3. If you stay at home or leave the house, leave your pets indoors in a comfortable room where the noises of people outside may not reach them. Thank you again for listening to this week's edition of the Producer's Pet Project. I hope you enjoy the rest of this week's episode of Your Pet Matters.
That was today's segment of Producer's Pet Project, your one stop for all things pet news, recall alerts, adoption services, and more. Be sure to tune in next time, and for a more in-depth conversation, listen to Your Pet Matters with Dr. T every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Producer's Pet Project is underwritten in part by Progressive Veterinary Care, only on 107.7 The Bronx.
We're back with Your Pet Matters with Dr. T of Progressive Veterinary Care, discussing everything you need to know to keep your furry friends happy, healthy, and safe. Only on 107.7 The Bronx.
I'm your host, Dr. Michael Tequila, or Michael Dr. T Tequila. Doesn't matter how you say it, but you're joining us right now on Your Pet Matters every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. And I wanted to talk about... It's a tough thing to discuss, but it's more a managerial thing for a vet hospital or any business, actually. It's a bad employee. And by bad, I don't mean evil bad, although toxic could kind of fall into that play. But it just encompasses an employee that he's either not fitting in well, literally not competent to do the job described, toxic employee, anything. It's just the three fundamental things I have found when a quote-unquote bad employee leaves the business. The first thing, the very first thing I want any business owners to think about is when a quote-unquote bad employee, and again, let me stress, not bad in the evil sense, unless they're toxic, but bad in the sense of just not fitting in, not a good employee, and good, again, in quotation marks, not good as in angelic good, good as in fits well with the practice, has the best practice intent, is not incompetent, etc. When they are not present, so one fundamental thing to think about is when they are not present, do you miss them? Do you miss their presence? And inevitably, 99.999% of the time, they are not missed. So think about that. That's number one of the, I'm going to talk about 3 points. Number one of the 3 points is they are not missed. Now, number two, again, involves their absence. Absence. When they are gone, either you have terminated them, they have left on their own, whatever. When they are no longer with your practice, unfortunately, you can see the legacy, I call it, i.e., potential damages they have done. So, in essence, if they had a job description to do A, B, and C, you will quickly find out that their actual actions may have been half of A, and forget about the other half of A and B and C. You will quickly find out their legacy. And I'm speaking through experience. I am speaking through experience that you will find out what they did do, whether it was add value to the practice,
But in 99.99% of the cases, they are not adding value to practice. So what sort of detrimental effects they had on the business, you will notice. And in my recent experience, it was what wasn't done that should have been done, and what was done that actually should not have been done, because what was done was a complete mishmash of what should have been done. So in other words, utter chaos. And so that's the number two thing, is that, so number one, do you miss them? The answer should be no. Number two, unfortunately, you will find out what legacy they left after they went. So it's there's a good and a bad to that. The bad is that the damage done to the business. You may have seen damage done to the business in their presence, but when they are not there, it really becomes clear. So that's one thing, again, through personal experience. And unfortunately, that legacy can remain for quite a while. Number three, I found, is that your good employees will then shine. So your quote-unquote bad employee, and actually, you know what? Honestly, I don't talk about bad employee. I can say team member, a key group, whatever. I mean, even amongst the radio station, there is a team of players, right? They're not necessarily employees. It's a team of players here, or a professional sports team. When you have a quote-unquote bad employee, bad team player, bad whatever, it's amazing how much their presence stifles your quote-unquote good employees. And I think the best term that I like using is your vested employees, because inevitably, no matter what they are, the quote-unquote bad employee, whether they're toxic, incompetent, whatever, their intentions, whether active and intentional, their actions, I should say, rather than active or intentional or whatever, always lead to detrimental effects on the business. They're not vested in the business for whatever reason. They simply can't, because they're not competent to, they choose not to be, or their ability to perform the duties just don't add up to that. So it is amazing how that quote unquote bad employee has an effect of stifling your good employees. And in my particular neck of the woods, after that quote-unquote bad employees left, it's amazing how you see the other employees either step up, step in, or they're open to do what they feel is best for the business, which is completely amazing. Or they, sometimes not by choice, they have to fill a role, right? So if you have a quote-unquote bad employee that's in a certain role, and you either let them go or they leave or whatever, there has to be, you know, you could rehire, but inevitably the existing team will temporarily at least have to fill that existing role. So I can tell you from strict experience, it's amazing. The quote-unquote bad employee, no one misses them in my current situation right now. No one misses them. No one. Number two, the legacy they have left is pretty extensive. Every day I am either informed of or discover something that really just wasn't handled in the best interest of the business or not done at all. So it's amazing what you see there. But the great outcome, the wonderful, beautiful, stupendous great outcome is that I am seeing the team actually not only fill the roles that the bad employee was supposed to do, but actually excel. So in one instance, I'm seeing a team member just go, you know what? Now I'm not stifled. I don't feel downtrodden. I don't feel limited to what I can offer this business. And they are going, and it's an amazing thing to say, to see. Absolutely amazing. So when you hear the term hire slowly, fire quickly, I can't emphasize the latter more. And in, you have a situation. I think that the veterinary profession is one where there's lots of choice. There's lots of choice for some key players. And so a lot of veterinary owners feel limited. They feel like, oh, I better hold on to this employee because I really don't know what's going to happen out there. And from personal experience, experiencing the negative effects of keeping such an employee, a quote unquote bad employee, I always look at that was time lost that the business could have incredibly benefited. In the end, I mean, it's working out great. It's working out phenomenally that the lack of the presence, like, you, A, if you don't miss them, what did they bring to the business? B, they're not continuing the legacy of chaos, as I call. And C, your team is stepping up. So it is amazing. So any business owner out there, any business owner, that you're looking at an employee and thinking, I would advise you to just cut your ties now. It will definitely benefit you for the future. And like I said at the beginning, I talk about things through experience because this is what I'm experiencing. And I'm not a manager. I'm not a veterinary manager consultant, but man, I tell you, if you're a young vet out there, young whatever, go-getter, and you're looking to own or whatever, always try to find a mentor. I always tell these young vets that I could save you 5 years of heartache based on the experiences I have learned. So it's always good to have someone who's been through it. They've been through it. I'm like that old guy who's been through it. So it's all good. And with that, I will bid you farewell until we meet again next week, right here on this same vet channel, on this same vet radio, Your Pet Matters. Signing off, Michael Dr. T. Tekiwa. And remember, everyone, love your pet like they love you unconditionally. Have a great day.
That was Your Pet Matters with Dr. T of Progressive Veterinary Care. You can tune in right here every Saturday at 10 a.m. Or to hear more right now, you can go to 1077thebronc.com/yourpetmatters, where you can download past episodes as podcasts on your favorite platform like Apple, Google, Spotify, and more. Your Pet Matters is underwritten by Progressive Veterinary Care, 390 County Road, Route 518, Skillman. For more information online, it's ProgressiveVeterinaryCare.com. We'll see you next time, only on 1077 The Bronx.